sind Theresa und
Nemo
und deshalb sind wir zu Shopify gewechselt.
Die Plattform, die wir vor Shopify verwendet haben, hat regelmäßig Updates gebraucht, die teilweise dazu geführt haben, dass der Shop nicht funktioniert hat.
Endlich macht unser Nemo-Boards-Shop dadurch auch auf den Mobilgeräten eine gute Figur. Und die Illustrationen auf den Boards kommen jetzt viel, viel klarer rüber, was uns ja auch wichtig ist und was unsere Marke auch ausmacht.
Starte deinen Test noch heute für 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/radio.
Welcome back to the Retronauts Cabin in Parts Unknown for yet another holiday podcast special. Once again, I didn't hear you come in, which is odd because I've spent most of 2020 being locked in a state of hypervigilance about potential danger. Anyhow, would you believe this is the 10th Retronauts holiday special to date? Yes, over the past decade, we've shared so many memories about Christmas-related video game things as society has gradually fallen apart around us. And we were quarantining before it was cool and mandatory. Thanks to the pandemic, we've had to make a few alterations around here, but I'm sure you'll find the Christmas spirit infecting every corner of the holiday cabin. There's a nice thick sheet of plexiglass for our guests to sit behind, of course, and unfortunately I've had to board up the fireplace because old Saint Nick is a deadly biohazard this year. And that sound you're hearing? It's HBO Max's virtual U-Log. Now that's one prestige chunk of wood that's burning in there.
And what about me? Steve, the favorite character of Retronauts.
Oh, and of course my robot companion Steve is with me as well. And this year he's been modified to emit a harmless antimicrobial gas to cleanse the air of toxins and fill it with any number of trendy aromatherapy scents.
What scent will it be, Master? I have candy cane, gingerbread, Santa Claus beard shampoo, elf, and freshly opened pack of Magic the Gathering cards.
Well, nothing says Christmas like a freshly opened pack of Magic the Gathering cards, so let's make it that. I got my entire family Magic the Gathering cards this year. Oh, it looks like our guest has arrived. Steve, go somewhere inconspicuous and continue filling the room with gas.
Master, I will hide myself somewhere and continue emitting odor.
Oh, come on in, Henry. How's it going?
Ooh, brr, hey.
Hey, stay behind the plexiglass. Oh. Stay behind the plexiglass.
Oh,
man. We have to do this safely. The government says you shouldn't travel. It's a stern warning at best, but I want to respect that at least.
I've been wanting to hug you all 2020, and I just haven't been able to.
After the vaccines.
Okay.
But yes, Henry is back for another holiday special. And last time, I'm going to dare say that was our best holiday special to date. I want to try to top the Pokemon Christmas Bash album retrospective. I still have all those songs in my head from last year, and I recommend you go back and visit that one because I just did. I'm singing the Meowth Little Stinker song to this day.
I again reject the coupling of Ash and Misty. It's wrong.
Not canonical, but we can just forgive them.
Yeah.
They're getting wrapped up in the Christmas spirit.
There's only five types of Christmas songs you can make, so they have to do the romantic one.
It really is true. And unfortunately, I couldn't find any other video game Christmas albums. It's a real shame. So maybe in the future we'll do another one of these. But in case you're not familiar with these holiday specials that we put on for Retronauts, this is the 10th one so far. So 10th one in a row that I've done. And what we do every year, we come to the Christmas cabin in Parts Unknown and we examine one video game related Christmas thing. And we've done that 9 times so far. This is the 10th. And today we'll be talking about the Earthworm Jim cartoon episode, For Whom the Jingle Bell Tolls, and a bit about the games. But in case you don't know, I do another podcast called What a Cartoon, where we go super, super in-depth into different cartoons. And we might do an even more in-depth episode of Earthworm Jim on that feed, on that podcast. This is going to be a lighter, more whimsical treatment, but we'll still talk about the history of the character and the game. So let's start off there, Henry. What is your history with Earthworm Jim in game form?
Oh, in game form, I really enjoyed the first one as a kid, but I also only rented it. I didn't buy it. But the first level I really, really enjoyed. But like most kids, I think I probably didn't get past the third level without a Game Genie or any of those cheat codes. And even then, I had to just read about what happens after the water level because there's only so much you can do.
Oh, you got stuck on the water level too?
Yeah.
That is such a giant difficulty spike in that game.
It's, I mean, yeah, I think as I look back on it now, I see it. That I loved it for the same reasons as a child that I loved the Aladdin on Genesis more than the other versions, because it was pretty and I thought it was like challenging and not bullshit. And so once I realized what game design actually was, I was like, oh yeah, this is poorly made.
Well, this has a lot in common with the Aladdin Genesis game. We'll talk more about that later. Any familiarity with the sequel, Henry?
I did play the sequel. I was excited for that. I think the sequel was, I do remember reading about how the sequel, like, I think it was one of the first times I read in something like, well, it's not made by all the same people. It's a second staff or whatever, and I realized that sequels can be given to other people, that it's not the same people making it again. When I played the sequel, I think that's when I realized, like, oh, this is just a mini game collection. This is not a platformer. It's a game where they make like three platformer stages and then build mini games around it. And I think I reflect more positively on Earth from Jim 2 because I think they had more fun with their mini games of, like, you know, the Peter Puppy on a Marshmallow mini game is basically just a Game and Watch game. But
it is. Yeah. It's like the Fireman game, right?
Yeah, it's just like Fireman, yeah.
My history with the games is very similar because Henry and I are identical in many ways. And that's, I did enjoy these games when they came out. It was cool. They were really cool, of course. They're famous for their, like, very fluid animation and their reverent sense of humor. And would you believe a worm stars in a video game? I can't. And I had the same issue as you, Henry, where the game design was pretty interesting on a surface level, but executing these clever ideas for a video game didn't always turn into a fun gaming experience. So yeah, like, I got stuck on the third level of Earthworm Jim 1. It wasn't until I actually got access to a level select code that I saw the rest of the game. And I think 2 is a much better game, but it still suffers from some of those same problems where the levels just seem to be arranged in a random order. There's no flow to them. It's just like a pinata full of random ideas. They just bust open in front of you. And in some ways that was neat because no other game was really doing that, but it doesn't add up to a game that has aged particularly well.
Yeah, the randomness is cute and all, and I think that's part of the fun that they were able to go like, well, and now it's just a new place. Who cares? Like that. I mean, on a certain level, I think they were trying to be like meta or postmodern about a video game in a fun way that, like, you have the sarcastic nature of just Sonic looking at the screen and tapping his foot. And then this is like such a huge expansion on that of just like as a concept. It's like, it's Princess What's Her Name. Who cares? Slug for a butt. It's intentionally the grossest thing it could be. You're going to heck. It's not hell because we can't say hell in a video game.
And nothing matters, and there's no real story to anything.
Yeah, and if you cared at the end, well, they do the save the princess at the very end, and then you get smashed to death by a cow that you launched at the very beginning.
Oh, no,
she does. Oh, yeah, she gets crushed, not
killed.
You. Yeah.
I guess she just gets injured by the cow.
Because she's in the sequel. So, yeah.
Yeah, so...
And then 3, I just did.
Well,
I
3
think
is
my brother
just,
rented it. But,
an abomination. It's a horrible 3D game made by no one associated with the original game. We might do like a full in-depth Retronauts on Earthworm Jim. This is just a surface level exploration of where the character came from and just general thoughts about the games. But the brief history of Jim, and Henry, I want to know if you have any thoughts on this. So in the early 90s, the toy company known as Playmates, they're having a great success with the Ninja Turtles line. Like, they are the main Ninja Turtle toy manufacturer, making money hand over fist, but they're like, we're paying a licensing fee to make toys based on a product. What if we have our own characters? We'll make all the money. Eastman and Laird don't get a chunk of that at all.
Those guys don't. Yeah, I mean, Eastman and Laird, they signed a really positive for them deal on TMNT that a lot of companies wouldn't give, but that's because it seemed like such a long shot. But after that fact, like, it was a deal that no other creator was going to get after them, I would think.
And it was an interesting marketing blitz on their part, because Earthworm Jim started as an idea for a toy line. Given how irreverent and sneering the actual games are, it feels weird that they're just designed to sell toys, but that's what they are. But Playmates' business plan was, we make the video game first, and then we sell the toys, and then there's a cartoon cartoon to promote the toys. So mm-hmm. both the video game and the cartoon are working in tandem to promote the toy
it's
line.
It's all about the toy. Man, I didn't realize toy was where it came first. That's funny. I mean, yeah, we talked about it with the show The Tick, too, and there were just many shows like this that were like, well, if we just have like a weird title that just makes you go like, huh, they made toys of that? Like, I think that was always their starting point. They're just like, oh, like for The Tick, they wanted to find every weird villain they could to put in it, too.
And Ninja Turtles definitely was an inspiration because it was taking an unlikely thing and making it into a hero, like a worm or a turtle or a bug like The Tick or actual cows from the Cowboys of Moo Mesa.
Yeah, you know, in the 80s, it was He-Man, and it was he is the strongest man, and he fights, and it's just like a very straightforward barbarian thing with maybe a little bit of sci-fi sprinkled on top. And Transformers were, what if your cars were also robots that fought? And G.I. Joe isn't Reagan's military the strongest? Like that, it was so straightforward. When you get to the 90s, you got to be like, isn't it crazy to have a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle who has the swords?
I'm surprised there weren't more modifiers on Earthworm Jim on his name. But so ultimately, there'd be only one series of 10 figures, and five of those figures were different variants of Earthworm Jim. I know, growing up, Henry, you were the toy boy. Did you own any of these figures at all? Maybe it was a bit too late.
Actually, no, I did own these figures.
All of them?
I'm a majority of them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so, well, I will say it was, I was a spoiled middle-class toy boy. That's, my mom would buy us pretty much any toy we asked for. Looking back on it, I'm like, I guess I did own every toy that came out from 90 to 95, maybe. But
then you just made it into the gym collection.
What helped was I was 13 when the TV series and I guess toys debuted in 95. And my brother, 3 years younger than me, so he was 12, the perfect Earthworm Jim age. So he, I'd say, was the bigger fan of it, but we both enjoyed it. And so, yeah, we had Jim regular. We had Jim in his scuba suit. We had the goldfish head guy. We had the crow and
Psycro.
We had Peter Puppy, and I recall Princess What's Her Name. I think that was. But if there were vehicles and stuff that came with them, we did not have those.
I don't think there were. There was a second toy line planned, and there are images of these online. And I think you can look up like plans for them, like literal blueprints of the toys, but they were never released. So this just amounted to 10 figures. Of this planning.
That if the first wave doesn't go, they got to cancel it real fast. They're like, don't, because it is a huge amount of money to make all those toys if you can't sell them. Like my favorite thing about the Jim toys was the Jim himself, at least the vanilla white suit Jim, his head could be shot out of his neck.
Okay.
Like
are the worst levels of the video game when you're out of your suits.
Oh, sure.
Awful.
But for a storytelling possibilities, on the cartoon show, he left his suit like every fourth episode something. That was most of the plot. So if you're playing with your toys, like, oh no, Jim lost his suit again. What are we going to do?
So Playmates is going to get into the video game industry. They've never done it before. And a hot and rising talent in the video game world is David Perry, a Northern Irish game developer who was a hot name because of slick, attractive platformers like Cool Spot and Disney's Aladdin for the Genesis. Go back to our controversial Disney's Aladdin episode on Retronauts, where we came down and said the SNES version is superior. The Genesis version is not bad. It is just of a certain style of European platformer that I don't cotton to.
You know, I feel the Overton window shifting.
Uh-oh.
On this debate.
It's the good Overton window.
Yes. I think we have convinced people. I think more and more you're hearing it. Everybody's talking about it. The Super NES version is the better version of Aladdin. And I mean, Cool Spot, like, that is one of the slickest commercials I've ever played.
Oh, yeah. Cool Spot's a fun game, but they all feel the same way. They're all, like, these slippery platform games with not a lot of, like, intentional design behind them.
Yeah.
You can feel, like, the level layouts just feel, like, haphazard. You don't feel guided in any way. Everything feels just, like, weightless. There's no impact to things. I mean, a lot of people enjoy these games, clearly, because Aladdin was, like, the number 3 selling game on the platform. it was up there. Maybe not number 3, but, like, in the top 5.
Very close
games.
To the top. Yeah, for me, my brain was programmed by Nintendo platformers. Like, those are the first platformers I played. So I definitely was. I loved the coolness of Cool Spot. What a cool guy. But by the second level, I was like, wait, what am I doing? I'm just walking around until I find every twinkle that's on this stage.
These levels are huge.
And that's when they do in Earthworm Jim, the stages that are, you know, supposed to be a linear type Mario stage, those get so like complicated or just like painfully challenging. It's really not Shiny's skill set, I don't think.
People loved it though. So Playmates recruits David Perry, and Shiny was founded via Playmates money.
Wow. So they're the seed money for Shiny. Damn.
Yeah, they just David Perry was like, if you want me to make this game, you need to fund a studio for me to make it with. And they're like, okay, we're Playmates, we have Ninja Turtles money, let's build you a studio. So yeah,
that
Shiny
guy is a slick businessman, that Dave Perry, man.
He is to this day, yeah. And so yeah, Shiny is funded via Playmates money. So the game was developed under Shiny and published via Playmates Interactive. So that is their publishing line. So I had no idea that Shiny, the developer, no longer exists anymore. Was funded by Playmates. That's crazy.
Yeah, that's nuts that somehow that takes us to Matrix video games. More than one Matrix video game.
And this awful game called Messiah, which has a lot of cool ideas, but it just is unplayable.
Oof.
So quick history of Shiny. After Earthworm Jim 1 and 2, they were acquired by Interplay. And currently, they and another dev were merged into Double Helix Games, and then Double Helix Games was absorbed by Amazon Game Studios.
Oh god, to make nothing, or yeah. I guess, well, to make nothing no one can play. I can't. I've known some folks who go to Amazon Games and then leave pretty quickly. I've known a couple friends who've done that.
I went to like the ribbon cutting ceremony for Amazon Game Studios. They spent a lot of money, and they were funding this esports game that was never released called Breakaway, which was actually kind of fun. I went to like three demos for it, but
that's right.
Seems like it's like an EA thing. Your company just goes there to die or to just be like plucked clean.
Yeah, it's an easy way to just like, hey, let's just cash out, guys. Like, let's just I just read a really great piece in Kotaku about the structure of Supergiant and how they're different from everybody else. It's like, oh yeah, all these, well, not everybody else, but like a lot of their indie brethren, they list, like, they just got bought by Microsoft. Everybody eventually goes like, well, let's cash out. And Supergiant hasn't yet. But I get the attractiveness of it for Double Helix. Like, do you have to, you hear so many stories of like, well, because that one project got canceled, the company's gone. And you just have to constantly be like searching for your next project if you're at that kind of scale. So I get why Double Helix was like, let's just go to Amazon. But Amazon scares me because the same level of Riot. I've been hearing like Riot Games, people have been rumored forever, like they're making a fighting game. They hired all these folks who worked on Street Fighter. They're going to do it. But they, like, Riot Games is at the scale that if they spent $50 million on a fighting game, they don't have to release it. They really can just go, eh, nah.
It's funny, like, all these companies with the most money, like Google and Facebook and Amazon, can't actually make a very good video game that people want. We just had the Game Awards. None of those were published by, like, Amazon or Google or Facebook.
Whatever's in their machinery, they can't get it out. I don't know what it is. Like, you get, you know, the mega conglomerate Tencent, you can say a lot of things about them, but they publish video games.
They do.
Get them out, you know?
And, so we talked about the games, a brief overview of them. Well, I'm sure we'll have a Retronauts formal one about these games in the future, but yeah, they haven't aged well. They're actually kind of hard to play today because they're not, as far as I could tell, not available for current platforms. You can buy the PC versions on Google Games and Steam, but they are the like old DOS versions of the games, and apparently the ports aren't very good.
I remember when Earthworm Jim HD came out on the 360. Yeah. Like, I think we were both in the press then, and it was just this realization, like, serious, you don't remember this game, do you, players? Like, this is fucking hard.
That game looks pretty bad, the HD version. And maybe on Xbox Series S. Did I get it right this time? X. Series
X is the best.
Maybe because everything is backwards compatible now, you could play it on that platform. But that might be the only one.
You know, I don't... Delisted games, you can have them on the 360. Like, I have the Simpsons game on my 360 file, but I can't play that file on my Series X even though I technically own it forever. Yeah.
But yeah, strangely, these are hard to play today. That could change in the future. Who knows? But yeah, they're not really available. And to wrap up the game chat, there's been so many ports of all of the first two games, which are the core Earthworm Jim games that the cartoon is based on, the toys are based on. So many ports of those. And then there are two other, like, I guess, official sequels. There's like a Game Boy Color game that nobody cares about or has heard of.
Right, yeah.
And then there's Earthworm Jim 3D, which was the obvious move, but it was, you know, at a time when all 3D games were ugly, barely any of them were playable, or at least, you know, more playable than a 2D game, and it's awful outside of the fact that Dan Castellaneta is voicing Jim in that game as well.
That was the one reason we rented it. We're like, well, we could get to hear more of Dan as Jim. That's fun. Yeah, my brother and I, it's funny how fast 4 years can feel like in childhood, because, you know, 4 years is nothing to me now, but 4 years at once Jim came out and we were playing on the N64, like, we have grown out of this. Like, this is not very good. Maybe it was also that we'd played Conker or other, like, at least better irreverent 3D platformers as well.
Yeah, the Jim bubble was so small, it was just 94 and 95. After that, like, everyone had moved on, which is why the cartoon ended in right before 97 started. Just like, all right, we got to get out by 96.
And one of my favorite bits of Jim trivia is that I believe it's the Sega CD version, there's a cheat code you can put in to give him it's not big head mode, but it is basically a parody head of Donkey Kong, because they were pissed off that Donkey Kong Country outsold them that holiday season.
And I think Earthworm Jim appears, yes, in one of the Clay Fighter games. He's a character.
That's,
I think,
right.
The 33 and a third, or 3.5, whatever the third
64,
one is.
63 and a third.
63 and a third, N64. Yeah.
Yeah, him and Booger Man fighting it out.
Hooray.
Yeah.
All the Interplay greats. And I believe Dan is voicing him in that game as well. So
he's above that. He really, I mean, this is before he got his big Simpsons payday in season 10. So maybe that's why he was like, I'll do it.
Maybe that was in his Earthworm Jim TV show contract. Like, you voice Jim in every commercial and video game and blah blah blah.
I hope he at least got some good pay for that then. He already was Genie at that time. Like, dude, if you're Genie, get big money to be Earthworm Jim.
I bet he did.
Yeah.
And Earthworm Jim 4 is apparently coming in April of next year, being 2021. It's a launch game for the Intellivision Amico.
Double pfft.
Yeah, a platform I don't understand. That's a different podcast, you know, entirely. But yeah, good luck with all that. It looks like a WiiWare game. It doesn't look good. It doesn't have the same style the other games had. It just looks cheap and bad. So I don't get it. Frankly, I don't get the Amico, but I have no Intellivision nostalgia.
I mean, you have to be in your 50s to have that now. And is that I don't get where the Venn diagram overlaps, because if you give a shit about Earthworm Jim, your Genesis or Super NES kid, you don't know an Intellivision. The Intellivision was like literally what your dad bought from his friend.
There's,
you know?
There's a weird connection in that Tommy Tallarico, who did the music for these games, he is the president of like Intellivision now.
Yeah, that's right. I figured there's a lot of like friends goofing about with the Earthworm Jim thing. I guess that's different than, like, I don't know, if it just got bought by Microsoft and they just did whatever they did with Battletoads and they do it with Earthworm Jim. Probably would end up with at least a little better game, I bet.
I think so.
That Battletoads game seems good.
I heard it was not bad if you can get over like the Flash style animation look to it.
Yeah, I mean, I did with Streets Rage 4. That's a fine game. So
Tommy Tallarico, he made the music for the first two games, and he was like one of the first known game musicians. Like, that would be like one of the names you'd see in a magazine in like 1997.
Yeah, G4 like built their whole thing around, well, Electric Playground, and then that went on G4 with Tommy Tallarico. Yeah,
and his songs in the games are good, but like the games themselves, they just seem arbitrary. A lot of the choices where it's just like, well, why is this song on this level? It feels like he just went off and made a bunch of songs and brought them to Shiny, and they just like, all right, I guess this is the garbage level song. I guess
I will say the heck level does sound like it's a funny intentional for the level song.
Yeah, where it goes from the famous like Night on Bald Mountain music to elevator music, because elevator music plays in hell, guys. There's lawyers in hell.
This is, well, I mean, that is the Gen Xer comedy that is very prevalent in the TV show too.
Yeah, man,
which I'm not saying is bad, but it's very specific.
We hated lawyers in the 90s. You fight lawyers in hell in the first game, and then you fight them in like this paperwork world in the second game.
I mean, McDonald's really succeeded in making people hate lawsuits.
It's true.
Yeah.
All of our humor was based on it. So let's talk about Earthworm Jim, the TV show. So brief history, personal history. Henry, did you watch this show?
Very much so, yeah. I mean, this was part of the... I was very successfully advertised to by Kids WB. All my favorites were back on that channel. And so I followed it to it, but mainly for the Warner things. And then I get to be surprised by, whoa, an Earthworm Jim show? And yeah, I think honestly, I have more fond memories about the show than I do the actual video games. Like me and my brother watched them a ton. Not only did we watch them a ton, you know, every Saturday, but also I think we had three VHSs, official release VHSs, two episodes each.
There were four total.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe we had all four, but we had more than two, and we ran them out. Yeah, I remember just looking. I looked it up on YouTube before we recorded, and I was like, there's a thing about, like, who are the voices? Like a fake behind-the-scenes thing they did.
Oh, for the tapes.
Yeah, for the tapes. That's great. They were a lot of fun. Even the tapes had very fun irreverence to them.
I definitely watched it because this is why I host a cartoon podcast, by the way, or co-host two of them, is that the day Kids WB premiered was one of the better days of my life, where I'm like, all of these new episodes, all of these new series, it's all the cartoons I love. So that morning, along with Earthworm Jim, we also had new episodes of Animaniacs. So that, after like a year of waiting, new Animaniacs, Pinky and the Brain, their series premiered.
Yeah.
Sylvester and Tweety Mysteries, I'm sure it's fine, I never watched it.
Sure.
And Freakazoid.
Oh God, yes, Freakazoid, man. And then the promise that in a year you're getting a Superman show. Like, I knew the Superman show was coming too. That Kids WB was quite a launch for the aging kids. But that, you know, behind the scenes, that was their problem, that they were getting the aging kids, not the toy buying younger kids.
Yeah, and that's why Freakazoid was paired with Jim for the last hour. So it was like an 11:30 combo, which I guess their theory was like older kids sleep in more, so the later shows are for them. So
sure,
yeah,
sure.
Earthworm Jim was the last show of the block.
And then it just turns into golf.
Or wrestling, maybe, right?
Or wrestling. Well, in some places. Cable, it was a migration to cable pretty much by then. I mean, if you were a hardcore wrestling fan in 95, you were watching the cable version, not the kids' presentation on TV. But yeah, Freakazoid is the perfect combo for this.
Yes.
They're like two sides of the same coin.
God, just thinking about Freakazoid, I'm just, it's a miracle it was made, and how did it get two seasons, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, through the force of Steven Spielberg, that's the only way.
I was just watching a lot of Mystery Science Theater over Thanksgiving break, which I normally do.
Yeah.
And I'm just hearing all the references that were also in Freakazoid, like all of these like 70s cop shows, all this old Hollywood stuff. I'm like, how did this get on the air? Because all the same stuff is in Freakazoid. All of the boomer humor for people who grew up in the 60s. That's all Freakazoid is.
I think it was that, like, literally executives didn't watch that closely. Or
yeah,
like
I guess he even said it was okay. So
yeah. Or I think too, on this show, they have fun with, like, we're being as violent as we can be, but the executives, the censors and stuff are watching for violence or potty humor. But if you wanted to just, like, say a random old celebrity like Lawrence Welk or something, you could just say it. They're like, whatever.
Or even do an impression of Lawrence Welk, which I think Freakazoid did do a few times.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yeah.
But yeah, so Earthworm Jim was the odd man out because these were all like prestige Steven Spielberg series just built on the brands of existing characters or classic characters. And Earthworm Jim is an old school, we're going to sell you toys cartoon with no Spielberg attachment. It was like the odd duck of the lineup.
And the only one not produced internally at Warner. And
that's true.
And that Warner doesn't own. It feels, I wonder if they had, like, we don't have enough money to make the last show to fill out our lineup. Like, what can we fill in? And they found Jim. And I think he was a really good fit for the channel.
Yeah, the sense of humor really fit in with, you know, your Animaniacs and your Pinky and the Brain. Just the irreverent, pop culture reliant, and slightly naughty humor.
Yeah, I think it gets, maybe they even got to be sillier and more irreverent and also adult focused because they were on the same channel as Animaniacs and Pinky and the Brain. They're like, well, Animaniacs and Pinky and the Brain get to have these kind of specific references for the adults. Why can't we do it?
That's why we also get like a peeing in the snow joke where it's
I couldn't believe that. Yeah. Yeah, I forgot that joke.
They linger on it for a while. So who developed this series? So this series was developed for television by Doug Langdale, who basically is the creator of the TV show because he was just given concepts, because all Earthworm Jim and the bosses are just concepts for toys.
Yeah.
There's no cohesive world they exist in. I mean, the story is like the suit falls to Earth and Jim becomes a hero, but that's basically all there is to it. There's no other lore connecting any of these people.
When the game is a joke, then there's no lore for it. Like, yeah, there's just one-off gags for each level. And that's why I think, Langdale, who was story editor, like, that is the head writer who has to pull together all of these things. Like, when you watch the intro to the show, which I gotta commend them for, like, original animation. For
yeah,
intro.
And that song is still in my head to this day. Never left.
Yeah, but when you watch the intro, he's, like, jumping between levels from the game, and it's just such a hodgepodge. It's like, or when you see all the villains running together in the opening, or when they do the team-up episode, they all look like they're from different series.
Yeah.
There's no cohesiveness even to their design.
And the designs are always, I think they're all a little too busy to work in limited animation like this or planned animation like this. I feel like they could have been simplified, but then they wouldn't look like the toys they're selling.
Well, they simplified them as much as possible. Like, if you look at, you know, Professor Monkey for a Head in the game, he is much more detailed than he is in the show.
And Queen Slug for a Butt, too.
Oh, I mean, yeah. Queen Slug for a Butt, she loses quite a lot of that butt to be able to even fit on this TV show.
And so Doug Langdale, this is a very old school cartoon setup. So there's 23 episodes. He wrote 16 of them. He probably would have written 23 of them he probably would have written all of them if he could.
Man, it's just like Muppet Babies.
Yes.
You just hire a guy and he writes.
Jeffrey Scott in a room.
That's right, yeah.
Get him some cocaine. Get him a typewriter. 18 hours later, you got 18 Muppet Babies.
They all teach a lesson and you'll just, you know, send it. You got to send him to Japan right now and get him to work on it.
But yeah, just, I mean, this is also why it's an odd duck for the Kids WB lineup. Every other show had like a head writer, a writer's room. This is just like Doug working by himself, and a few of the scripts presumably are freelancers writing that he's tuning up.
Yeah. I would think Langdale, he comes from the Disney afternoon and he has the youthful energy. Like he's in his mid 20s when he's doing this show. So, you can just spit that stuff out. And I think too, that's why there's a cohesiveness of like running gags in this too, because Langdale just remembers like, oh yeah, that's funny. Why not bring up Haggis again? That was a funny bit when I did it three episodes ago.
And of course the cow comes down at the end of every episode.
It's always great. Yeah. I think Langdale got a pretty good gig. I probably didn't pay too well at Horrible Hours, but I mean, the amount of freedom he seems to have had in building this world to his very specific, I would say, Monty Python and Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy heavily informed style comedy. Like, he gets to just live it in this show.
Yeah, it gave him a chance to be a showrunner, which he'd do in the future. Before this show, though, he was on, like you said, Henry and Disney Afternoon stuff. He was a story editor and writer on the Darkwing Duck series and the Aladdin series. And I will say, yeah, it is like a sort of Darkwing Duck level of irreverent humor with a superhero.
Yeah. I didn't even think of it. Maybe that's why Cummings is on this show, too, that Jim Cummings, that he works so well with him on Darkwing. And I definitely think I'd wonder if Tad Stone's made him like a special like mentorship project, because it was on his shows like on Aladdin as well that he really gave Langdale a lot of opportunity for such a young guy.
Unfortunately, I couldn't find an interview with Langdale about this series, but I could tell you what he did after. So he co-created the short-lived series Project Geeker, and then he would go on to create by himself The Weekenders and Dave the Barbarian. And we have a What a Cartoon episode about The Weekenders, which was one of the many kids doing stuff cartoons of the late 80s, early aughts. Sorry, late 90s, early aughts.
Yeah, for a time, right after September 11th, 2001, for a time, it was the shining star, The Weekenders, of one Saturday morning. Like, with Variety in a press release, they called it the Pokemon Killer, which really meant it beat Pokemon in the ratings one Saturday once. And so, I mean, but Disney was smart. You know, if you beat Pokemon once, get that in the trades and tell everybody, like, Pokemon's over. It's the Weekenders now.
Variety will write a classy headline about it, or a snappy headline.
And as we all remember, like, the Weekenders was just as popular as Pokemon. Yep. Kids remember it just as strongly.
I just downloaded the new Weekenders game for my Switch.
Weekenders Snap is coming very soon.
Actual millennials love that cartoon. We are fake millennials, and that we are just a hair's breadth away from Gen X. So
yeah. Though I mean, I can see the appeal of it. Weekenders. It was we had a good time watching it, and it also has a similar Earthworm Jim sense of humor of like randomness, mm-hmm. definitely randomness, and also just a kind of I wouldn't call it like counterculture exactly, but definitely like a looking down or at American society, or just like, man, we're kind of shallow, aren't we? Like those kind of thoughts, which I really loved in this episode rewatching it. Oh, on Langdale, I did want to say too, if you guys want to watch on YouTube, he also has uploaded like recent stand up of his.
Oh,
like,
he does stand up too.
Yeah, in the last year or something, I think he went to like obviously not in 2020, right. I mean in 2019, he went to some open mic nights, and it seems like he was like, hey, I'm trying to work out my comedy again. And he had some funny, like, you know, if you're worried about his politics or anything, he did a lot of fun like anti-Trump and pro-gay stuff. So I'm like, okay, he seems at least like cool Hollywood liberal type.
In his IMDb picture, he's got like a cool red mohawk.
Yeah, though sometimes, you know, you see guys with cool red mohawks there, and they start telling you about like, yeah, and conservatism is the new punk, man. Have you ever read Atlas Shrugged?
You got to look at what their t-shirt says first. Yes, you see the mohawk, look down a little bit. I couldn't find an interview. He seems like a cool guy. Still fairly young. He got an early start, and he's still writing to this day. But I did want to talk about the voice cast before we go on to the cartoon, because
oh, man, what a cast.
They brought out the big guns. So number one, Earthworm Jim, Dan Castellaneta, Homer Simpson himself, and also the false genie. But
yes,
to me, I like that genie. He's good.
There's far more hours of him as genie than there is Robin Williams.
Oh, so many more. But man.
And he's the video game genie too. Like, well, Robin Williams was him at one point in Click Adventure before he corrected me.
In MathQuest.
Yeah, it's fine. But in Kingdom Hearts, Dan Castellaneta is the genie in it. So yeah, he is not... I don't feel like I've ever heard something where like Dan is phoning it in, even when he's having to do like Homer Simpson talks to investors at Disney meeting. I feel like he's trying. Like he just doesn't have it in him to take it easy.
He is giving it his all. I don't know if this is a role he could do 25 years later, because Earthworm Jim is always screaming.
he is always
screaming.
His maniacal laughter he has to do. It's like, no, this is every line that he does. Like it's not like the one time every Simpsons episode where Homer has to like go crazy or whatever. This is every time he's like, eat dirt, you brother! Like, that was hard for 3 seconds.
I think he was probably like around our age when he was doing this role too.
Yes, yeah.
But so Dan Castellaneta as Earthworm Jim, also mega huge voice actors like Jeff Bennett. He plays like the very John Cleese, Lord Bravery style announcer.
It is just his Lord Bravery voice, you're right. But man, it's funny. I mean... Yes, it's you're right. It's just the enough of something completely different.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's not even necessary. I feel like that narration just removes animation from the equation. Like, if he talked over this establishing shot? We could save 20 seconds of animation in every episode.
Yeah, it did lead to good jokes, too, of Jim just going like, excuse me, Mr. Narrator. What? Like, he'd get mad at him sometime, or they talk to each other. That I always love the meanwhile, like Peter Puppy is just like just average dude voice.
I'm pretty sure like that's also Jeff Bennett, but I didn't look that up.
I believe so. And he's Johnny Bravo, man. It's funny that he's the pipsqueak Peter Puppy and the ultimate stud Johnny Bravo.
And he is Dexter's dad on Earthworm Jim on Dexter's Lab.
He's great. Oh God. Dexter's dad. One of the best. I love that. I love that voice. Just, hey, he's also a very boomer comedy, like magnet. Dexter's dad.
I mean, they live in like the 60s family, Dexter and Dee Dee. But yeah, we have so many people on this cast. Charlie Adler, of course, the first Buster Bunny.
The greatest.
Jim Cummings, who was Darkwing Duck. Also Pete and like Winnie the Pooh. Like the biggest cartoon characters Jim Cummings has voiced.
Yeah, he's Psycho, but also he's he's one of their most like utility voices in this series. Like I was so glad in watching this one to see one character come back in this.
And Jim Cummings, I was like, I wonder how many times he played Santa. Wouldn't it be fun to just point that out? But then I went to his IMDb, and frankly, he played Santa too much, so I can't count all the Santas he played, but he played a lot of Santas.
I'm glad you investigated that, because definitely watching this, I was like, man, he has to have played Santa more than five times, at least, across multiple companies.
According to, like, Word Find and Replace or whatever on Firefox, he played him at least 14 other times. Man, so.
Wow. And I this is a really fun way of playing Santa. I really, not to get ahead of ourselves, but I really like what they do with Santa.
I wish they played up his sociopathy more.
Yeah.
Just what a jerk he is.
I think they put it right to the line of what would be allowed on a kids' TV show. I mean, honestly, I can't believe they let Santa be even this evil in a kids' TV show.
But yeah, we also have Kath Soucie, of course, and just so many other mega huge stars. So like even like Ben Stein, Kevin Michael Richardson, Brad Garrett, Billy West, April Winchell, and Andrea Martin is Queen Slug for a Butt. So like the famous comedian from SCTV is in this as well.
She is the greatest. I when I hear her in this, I'm like, man, she should be voice acting and more stuff. She's just so good. I also loved her as Julie Klausner mom on Difficult People from a few years back. She's great in that. I mean, she's always awesome, and I think she has cool choices in the stuff she makes too. Like she's when Hedwig and the Angry Inch came out, like that would just be this weird gay musical thing, but she was the most famous person in it, and I think lended a lot more early credibility to an underground queer film that really needed it. I appreciate that too.
She's really great in this. In fact, I think they're more interested in her than in Jim in this episode, because I feel like she's in it almost as much as he is.
Oh yeah, yeah. They go, I mean, this is so late in the production, they know that she's not just there to be the evil cackling like queen. She can just say tons of hilarious lines and sell them perfectly. Like she's the opening sketch villain and the full episode villain. It's quite a lot of slug for a butt for your dollar in this one.
And this was a cartoon meant to sell things, and once it did its job, it went away and it just served its purpose, and it was fairly pleasant. It was weird to see this kind of a cartoon this late. I'm sure there are other ones, but especially as part of this block, this toyetic cartoon, which Freakazoid made fun of, it taught kids of the world what toyetic meant. It was the next cartoon in the block.
Yeah, I think it is like the last of its kind, along with we had that with the Space Monkeys cartoon.
That's
too.
Right,
that was like one of the last, or Street Sharks. It came, these ones that once they come post 94, they're trying to keep the toy train going, but it had shifted. It had, and what it shifted to, it wasn't the kids bought less toys, it's that they bought 17 of the same Batman except a different color. Like that, superheroes pretty much just had fully taken it over, I think, by the mid-90s. Yeah.
I mean, they knew what they were doing with the toys, because like I said, there were five Jim variants, and like a lot of the villains were bundled together in the same sets.
Yeah. Which as a young toy buyer, it bugged me, because I was like, I don't need a third version of Jim, because if I'm going to be playing out stories, Jim's not going to talk to Jim all that much.
Which battle damage version do you want?
I can't believe they got away with like, we own the evil Jim too, which was just like, it's just the same sculpt but green, and they gave him a different head.
I'm glad you brought him up, because actually I do remember a few jokes from this cartoon just from my youth, and one of them is regular Jim is fighting evil Jim, and then regular Jim says, wait a minute, if you're the bizarre version of me, wouldn't you not want to win? And he says, don't take things so literally, or something
joke.
Like that. But
yeah.
I was like, no one ever thought of pulling that on Bizarro Superman.
That's right.
Like,
yeah.
Like, wouldn't you want to lose if you're the Bizarro version of me?
Oh, man, that's such a good joke.
Yeah.
There's so many good jokes in the show. I think they like another of my favorites. In an opening sketch, I forget the episode, but the opening sketch is that they are going to save the president in the White House. They go up to the guy, and he's just like a white guy with orange hair. And Jim goes like, you don't look like the president. And he says, I'm one of those generic presidents they put in TV shows so it doesn't date it in reruns.
I did. That's another one I remember. Yeah, there are some inspired moments. I will say, like, the most the worst quality of the show is the animation, which it's a fairly high-budget show for what it is. But, again, the designs don't lend that well in animation, especially with the budget that's being given to the show. So like, it's not visually that interesting, and I think a lot of the visual jokes are messed with because of the just the pipeline and the lack of money and how fast they had to make these.
I wouldn't call it like terrible or super cheap looking, because we have watched Street Sharks or even like the Saban shows that had good writing, like X-Men or Spider-Man. You could tell they were stretching every dollar possible on screen. This one, I mean, next to Freakazoid in the same hour-long block, this looks cheap, very cheap.
Definitely.
But in the realm of toys to be sold into syndication, it looks better. I think it looks better than Bucky O'Hare.
Oh, I think so, too, yeah.
Or, like, to compare it to a previous show we me and you talked about on Retronauts, the Sonic Extreme Christmas Blast, like, that looks like dog shit compared to this.
Yeah, it's at least better than that, but I guess, yeah, being next to Freakazoid, like going from a TMS Freakazoid, one of the few, slamming into Earthworm Jim, it was a jarring experience.
For sure.
So this is not streaming anywhere, but there's still a DVD that's still in print, and it's fairly cheap. It's under $20, so if you want all 23, it's there. But yeah, like, this series existed for 15 months to sell two games and one toy line, and that's what it did.
They don't want you to have any nostalgia for it or anything like that, and I think, too, it's... I was really surprised it wasn't on Peacock. Because it's a Universal production, and Peacock is where no one cares to watch the Savage Dragon cartoon show that was on USA Network. No one signs up for Peacock to see it, but it along with, say, the film Roman Felix the Cat and other shows, they're just on Peacock to have another just chunk of content that, like, hey, if you sign up, you can watch it. So I'm really surprised that they don't have Earthworm Jim in there. I wonder if it is like a partial rights thing with Shiny that they didn't sign streaming deals for that or something.
It's a licensed character. They may have to reapply for the license or whatever.
Maybe,
yeah, who knows? But I mean, it's still, if you want to buy the DVDs, it's still available. And of course, if you type Earthworm Jim in an episode title, you might be able to find it online because nobody really cares about this.
Yeah, yeah. There's not, YouTube is more stringent than I thought it would
be. It is.
But they're out there. And the DVD set, it's a fine DVD set. At the very least, there's a lot of shows like Mighty Max and others that are just lost. Like, nobody even cared to dump Television Masters onto a disc.
God, yeah. And it's like, you can watch bad VHS rips of that show, but that's another one that needs to be preserved. But yeah, if you want to find it, it's out there. Now we're on to the episode itself. For Whom the Jingle Bell Tolls, I don't know if I mentioned this up front, but this is the last episode of Earthworm Jim because it was just like there were 10 for fall of 96. The 10th one happened and it was the last one, and it was in December. So there you have it.
Man, that's a real like cheap out. Like, you don't even renew for 13. You're like, we'll take 10 more. Sure, fine.
Slap in the face.
And one, it has to be the Christmas episode just in case they are like, well, we can rerun this forever. It's the Christmas episode. Like, it, every cartoon show has to have a Christmas episode. Like, that's how we're able to talk about so many cartoon ones, because that was just the demand of it.
It's like pay dirt for us.
It's funny to chart the level of sincerity going down, like, every year. Like, the one of the earliest ones is like the Pac-Man one, which is very sincere. It's like, oh, the spirit of Christmas. And even the Super Mario one is like, it's still the spirit of Christmas thing. But by Sonic, it's kind of jokey, and then this one is just, it dumps it all. Like,
in the Sonic one, he becomes Santa Claus.
Yeah, Santa is very happy, like, you're Santa now. All right. Yeah,
I like how they point out in this one, and just like, everyone does this where we have to save Santa. That is the plot of every one of these.
I love that Peter Puppy knows that they are in a very stock idea of a Christmas episode. Like, it's not the one where Santa gets killed. adapt.
And the writer of this episode is John Loy. So on our other podcast, What a Cartoon, and yes, most of this episode is an ad for What a Cartoon, by the way. We do the same thing over there. But on that episode of Back to the Future, the animated series, we did the premiere of that one called Brothers, and the writer of that one, John Loy, wrote this one. He was in the Universal Cartoon Studios world.
Yeah, maybe he had some overall deal of like, yeah, you owe us six scripts. We'll tell you which series you're going to do it on.
And yeah, he worked on other Universal productions like, you know, Back to the Future, the Problem Child cartoon, and lot of Land Before Time sequels. He wrote them himself.
That was really what Universal, I think, is probably the only real success they had, because those... it turned into a joke as a kid or as a teen. Getting older was like, oh, wow, Land Before Time 2. I'm so excited. And then eventually, Land Before Time 14. Come on.
They eventually stopped, and I'm surprised. Like, yeah. There's always a market for those movies.
It was interesting that they kept choosing to number them as a new film instead of like making it. I mean, the money sink had to be the same as making it a regular TV show, but they always sold them as a direct-to-video movie. They were the OVAs of their time.
It's true, but... the animation sucked.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
But yeah, so John Loy, he's been writing animation for 35 years, still doing it today. So that's the guy behind this one. But this episode opens with a classic decorating the house scene. And of course, a joke that I always like, even though it dates back to the 40s, is your secret hideout with a giant billboard in the air pointing to it saying, this is my secret hideout.
You're right. That joke it's right there in the Duck Twacy cartoon. And there it is there. Well, there is something... it feels funny of just seeing a Dan Castellaneta character having an accident as he puts the Christmas lights on. There's something to that too.
And his voice for Jim, we'll hear it a lot. I don't know how to describe it. It's like it feels completely unique Dan voice to me.
Yeah, I can't. I mean, it's like the manicness. If you hear Homer say like, "Go crazy, don't mind if I do," like that's kind of the voice, but it's also not exactly like. For the evil Jim, it's his Megavolt voice.
Right.
Like, yeah, that's just completely what it is.
It feels like just Dan's voice, but with more superhero bravado.
Yeah.
But then you can hear like Krusty in his voice when he goes crazy.
Yes.
When he goes crazy as Jim and screams.
Okay, the Krusty comes through in there. But yeah, I think it's he found an original voice to give to this lead, which is the biggest demand of being the lead in a show like this. Like you really, I mean, I guess you could get away with it if it just sounded exactly like Krusty. What's Disney going to do? Sue him? Like, it's just a man's voice. But you're expected to bring something unique to it.
And he definitely is a star of the show in more ways
than
one.
So much, yeah. And they hit the eat dirt catchphrase so early.
Right.
Here too. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure groovy was said on this at some point.
It's in the opening every time. And I feel like he says it a bit, but... Eat dirt turned into his thing, like eat dirt, you blah 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 blah. I watched on YouTube, there was a 7-minute compilation, I think, of every time he said eat dirt or eat yogurt or some play on it. And my favorite part of every eat dirt was he go like eat dirt, and then he would just cackle maniacally while blasting his gun in every direction.
They're
like,
so lucky they gave him a laser gun to shoot, because he fires that thing a lot.
Though, bug me, the rules of he got to shoot it more than most characters get to shoot guns in cartoons in the 90s, but he never gets to hit or very rarely gets to hit stuff. I think they got away with more violence than most shows did, like definitely more than the Turtles got away with in their, like, you know, most cartoonish days.
Yeah, because Jim can fire his gun at someone, but they turn into, like, you know, in a Looney Tunes when you get blown up by dynamite, basically, just like a pile of ashes.
Yeah, maybe that was their loophole. They're like, hey, this is no more violent than what happens in those Bugs Bunny cartoons airing on ABC at the same time.
And Jim's voice in the games is way different than this before Dan showed up.
Really?
It's like, ow! Like, it's like a weird Texas twang.
Yes.
Yeah. And I was thinking about it a lot this morning. It's just like, why was it funny that he said groovy? Is it because we weren't saying groovy in the 90s? Was that the joke?
I mean, it could also be that they enjoyed the film Army of Darkness and Evil Dead 2.
I think Duke Nukem said it first.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm sorry. Duke Nukem, the inventor of saying groovy.
Chewing bubblegum, kicking ass. He said all those things.
Yeah, and tearing off someone's head and crapping down it. Like, he did it all, that Duke Nukem, a real innovator.
Should have been a lawsuit. But so, yeah, this is when, during this house decorating scene, Queen Slug for a Butt shows up. We hear her entire name in this next clip.
Queen, pulsating, bloated, festering, sweaty, pus-filled, malformed slug for a butt!
Earthworm Jim! I shall destroy you! And you too, you mutt!
Hey, you made me toss my cookies!
Eat, festive dirt! Get this spoiler of holidays!
Wait! I almost forgot.
For me? You shouldn't have.
Oh, torn nothing.
This is so sweet.
You gave me that last year!
So it's some nice Looney Tunes humor. And
I like that.
I was just thinking, Dan's screaming voice for Earthworm Jim reminds me of the "When do we get the frickin' guns" guy.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I think his militarism and wanted like gun shooting is probably very similar to him. I mean, on the twerk nothing, I hear a little of Rich Texan in there. But yeah, it's just him screaming and laughing. Is he like? There's the secret to him playing Earthworm Jim is that he is a mentally unhinged, violent man who just happens to be the good guy of this cartoon
yeah.
show.
There are definitely some jokes they wouldn't make today on this show.
Oh yes, yeah, you're totally right.
Jim is very troubled, but
they got away with a "you made me toss my cookies" joke.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah,
that's cute.
And the same cold opening with the pee joke we'll get to later. Yeah. But yeah, there's an action set piece basically like Jim throws a snowman display over her, wraps her with Christmas lights, pulls the Christmas lights, flops her onto a sled, and then straps his rocket that we see in the games to that whole mess and blasts her off and through his secret headquarters sign into space.
And then it turns into a salsa hut sign instead, which, you know, the green and red, it works for a Mexican restaurant sign or for a Christmas light.
It's Tom's Mexican Salsa Hut, which is a nice anagram, I guess.
Oh, that is good, yeah. And also, I mean, the comedy of a man named Tom running a salsa hut, that's funny, too.
And I guess that's when we get to the scene where they're talking about the meaning of Christmas, and there's like a little aside where Jim spots Peter's name written in the snow. I mean, it's not like yellow, but you understand the joke.
And I mean, especially the reaction shot of Peter going like that. I was honestly shocked. Like, I think as a kid, I didn't get that, you know?
And so Jim talks about, we still have the true meaning of Christmas, and Peter says, pretending to like all the lousy presents you get, and he says, "You got it, Fuzz Buddy." So yeah. we're taking down Christmas in 1996.
I love, this is an incredibly cynical cartoon by 96 kids cartoon standards. And I like that Peter will put that into practice at the end of the episode by pretending to like a gift he has given.
And then we get the Earthworm Jim song, and I'll just drop that in right here.
Earthworm Jim,
the soil he did crawl.
Earthworm Jim,
a super super fall. Jim was just a dirt eating chewy length of worm flesh, but all that came to a crashing end.
Earthworm Jim,
he's such a groovy guy.
Earthworm Jim,
he rockets through the sky, cruising through the universe, having lots of fun. Here comes Earthworm Jim, you know that he's a mighty one. Despite his great big muscles and his really big ray gun, Jim is still an earthworm, but then he's the only one with a super suit to make him really super strong. Jim can be a winner if we only sing along.
All right! Earthworm Jim!
We think he's mighty fine.
Earthworm Jim!
A hero for all time!
Earthworm Jim! Hooray for him!
Groovy!
It's a nice way to kill a minute, I'll say that. And it does capture the general tone of the WB show surrounding it, except it doesn't name 1,000 characters.
Yeah, you know, I didn't even consider it being of the type of the Freakazoid or Animaniac opening, but it is like, say, it also does follow the rules of TMNT of repeat the name over and over again so kids remember it, but...
Earthworm Jim.
You think he might be fine? Yeah, that it shows you every villain, but doesn't name them. But it, and just seeing them go around the other stages from the game, I like. I mean, this is, compare it to Super Mario Brothers Super Show, where you go to like freaking Sumo Land or whatever. I think this is much more true to whatever lore is in the video games as far as that goes. And I always love the cutaway of, he activates Peter Puppy's evil side, and then it cuts to him sleeping as a joke about censorship. They're like, well, we can't show him tearing Jim apart.
That little interlude with him sleeping in a hammock and inhaling a butterfly is very funny and very well animated.
Yeah.
I will say that. They save the best animation for up front, like they normally do.
Yeah, and a little bit in the credits at the end of him like smashing his head against the wall, occasionally you can get a little good animation of a floppy worm head squishing around, and if they had a little more money, I think they could have done more with that. Oh, and also the drawings of him is like with the big 50s hair, also him in the snail body. Like, that's very fun.
Those are cute drawings. And I remember I had a weird memory of this, and that my friend in like 95 had a computer with a CD-ROM drive. And back in that day, some magazines would come on a CD-ROM.
Whoa.
Like this magazine called Blender. And I remember they had like a thing about cartoons, like a feature about cartoons on the CD-ROM magazine. And the Tick was on the cover of the magazine.
Oh, cool.
But they also talked about Earthworm Jim, and they had the entire opening you could watch. So we watched it over and over in a little quick time window.
You could watch, being able to watch an opening whenever you felt like it was magical at a certain time.
It was probably the worst quality ever. It was like lesser than an animated GIF, but we had fun with it in 1995.
I wish me and my brother taped this off TV. We didn't, so even though we really enjoyed Earthworm Jim and rewatched those VHS episodes of that handful, there are many we don't. I have like some that I have super memorized because they were on those VHS tapes, and ones that are more that are a lot more spotty just because I watched them in reruns and never taped them off TV, like this one.
So now we're more than 3 minutes in, the episode can fully start.
Yeah.
And the cold opening is such a fun sheet eat up time, isn't it?
Oh yeah, they're always fun. Usually they aren't even connected to the second segment, and I mean, this basically isn't because Queen Slug for a Butt doesn't treat the first one is having just happened, but other times it's like, oh, he'll fight Psycro in the opening 2 minute thing, and then the rest of the episode he's fighting the fishbowl guy or whatever his name was.
Yeah, I mean the characters are so thin that it's honestly I'm surprised they went with full length episodes for them and not like shorts, you know.
Yeah, just an 11 minute thing would work better, but you know, maybe then you gotta, the pay scale gets different and it's like, what are you paying, you know, Landell to do 44 11 minute things? That might cost you more money than 23 22 minutes.
I got to see that contract. But we're at the beginning of the episode and we're on Insectica, which I don't remember from the games, but that's where Queen Slug for a Butt lives. And earlier we heard Jim say her entire name, which is actually the factual name of the character, but we don't say it all the time.
And in 96 it felt, to have a regular character with the word butt in their name seemed, that was a little ribald.
That's 11:30 territory, buddy. We're not airing that at 9.
Maybe that's really why it's on at 11:30. You can say putty tat all you want, but you can't say slug for a butt.
Can you say potty emergency?
A potty emergency.
So yes, she's engaging in unspeakably vile activity exercise, and we see her engaging in some light aerobics, and she feels good about herself, and that's the important thing, which is like a positive, body positive message for 96, I will say.
Yeah, it feels like a joke about the self-actualizing fitness tapes of the Jane Fonda era for sure. And especially the idea of like, well, you shouldn't feel good about yourself because you have a giant slug butt. But I also, whenever I see your scepter, I'm reminded of another just great gag in the show, was that I forget why, it was a road trip episode where they go to a Stuckey's and they buy a nut log and they find out that you can't eat it. It can't even be like cut or changed in any way. So at the end of the episode, Earthworm Jim realizes how he can beat her. He throws the nut log at her super powerful scepter, and it is tougher than her scepter even, and shatters it.
That's another joke I remember. We were never subjected to these nut logs or the fruitcakes we'll see at the beginning, or sorry, at the end of the episode. Like, our generation missed these things.
When I think of that nut log, I never bought one, but I knew it as a Sam and Max Hit the Road joke, too.
Like, me too.
And very, all of these same, Steve Purcell, Langdell, all these guys came from the same, you know, road trip with your parents through the 70s lifestyle. We live different lives of going nowhere and buying toys
and watching cartoons like this.
Yeah.
So the queen has this little assistant called the Archbug, her palace loony, and this is how she finds out all about Christmas.
It's quite simple, actually. Santa Claus travels to every home on Earth in one night, leaving gifts for every good little girl and boy. And
hang on!
The Toads of Fate are one thing, but that's just plain ridiculous!
But your Festerance, he has a magical flying sleigh!
A magical flying sleigh? Well, why didn't you say so in the first place?
My mistake, your blooditude.
I mean, it sounded so absurd, but once you mentioned the magical sleigh, it all made perfect sense.
Yes'm, I have it on the highest authority in the universe, Earth Television.
Jorgen Vinborgen Sinterklaas?
Lufthaar! Now, tell Pa the truth, or Santa Claus will leave a lump of coal in your stocking.
Yeah. Right, Pop.
Today's topic, kids who caught their moms kissing Santa Claus and moms who are proud of it.
So
that's dirty.
Yeah.
And though I guess she's proud that she kissed her husband, you know, but to have it be the parents, the mom telling their kid, I'm proud I kissed Santa Claus and I'm glad you saw it. But that's weird.
It took me a while to realize that song was about the kids saw mommy kissing Santa Claus because that was actually the dad dressed up
as
Santa.
That's growing up is learning that that's what that song is always about.
Santa's dead, but your dad gets kisses.
Your kid, yeah, at least be happy. Happy your dad got sexually rewarded for dressing up as Santa Claus. That is a good, that a father would even be that involved in helping with gifts, and then to not only help lay out the gifts but dress up as Santa Claus in case his kids catch him doing that.
We've lost these values as society.
Every parent should dress as Santa Claus before they lay out those toys.
Never happened to me. I always like to see the irreverence about Santa Claus and kids stuff, where when you are, I don't know, 7 or 8, you start to question these things. Like, wait a minute, how could he do this, this, and this? But apparently the magic sleigh is what makes it make sense to Queen Slug for a Butt.
Yeah, I like that for her, that as they edge up to questioning the reality of it many times, and then the joke has to be like, well, no, an even sillier thing explains why it's true. Like, that kid, though, who is being warned about the coal in his stocking, he knows it all. He's like, yeah, sure, Dad. Like, but, I mean, that's as close as you can get to. On a kid show back then, you obviously couldn't say Santa Claus isn't real. Like, you could never, you wouldn't get away with that. And I'd see that as, like, I don't know, it's weird for me. That I'd be more upset if a kid show said that than if they said Jesus is a lie or whatever, or anything about a religion. That's, I guess, I guess consumerism is much more my religion than Christ.
In this episode, Santa Claus is real. He's a real bastard.
Oh my God. Yeah. I do just love the line of, like, I have it on the highest authority in the universe, Earth Television.
This actually reminds me a lot of Santa Claus Conquers the Martians.
Whoa.
When, like, another planet wants Santa Claus and they find out about him through TV.
Wow, you're right. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if this is an intentional reference to that, because that was, you know, the kitschy garbage TV that those kids grew up on. Like, when MST3K mocked it, I would think a lot of boomers watching it then knew it as, like, oh yeah, that terrible film.
That had to be a staple of, like, Saturday afternoon programming for decades. So yeah, Queen Slug for a Butt wants to capture Santa Claus, uses power to conquer the Earth, and then we go to the North Pole. And there's Santa Claus. He's there, of course, and he's examining this fashion doll beach house. But there's a little problem, and that problem is it all fits together perfectly. So he orders an elf to remove a single part from each box after smashing the beach house. So we see some nice commentary on this the shoddy merchandise the show is trying to sell, I guess.
Oh, yeah. I love that joke. They're like, oh, why is it hard for parents to put together a dollhouse or build any toy for their kid ahead of time? Well, it's because Santa intentionally does it to drive them insane. He's like, this is a cruel taskmaster. A couple times they play him as just regular Santa, but I much prefer him as a guy who has elves that are basically his serfs who he tortures, and also he wants to drive parents insane.
I was never part of that sort of situation where you'd see the TV commercials, your parents help you put it together. It's like, my parents were not helping me. I had to learn these things on my own.
Well, now it is the responsible parent doesn't put them together. They take the video game console out of the box beforehand,
yes,
and update it the night before.
That's an important Christmas lesson for all of you parents out there. Download those firmware updates.
Otherwise, you're going to be waiting until noon on Christmas Day or whatever day you open gifts during the holiday season, and you're going to be waiting a long time to update everything and then also download all the games you purchased.
Well, Cyberpunk needs to update.
Yeah. Look, I know you really wanted Miles Morales, but it hasn't copied off the disc yet. I'm sorry.
So we also see some more scenes of Santa Claus abusing his help. So he calls the elf to help him take out, or just basically take the parts out of the boxes. But he he also is like, take off my boots. And then when the elf is reluctant, he goes, don't cross me, boy.
Oh, God, yeah. Later we find out they leave it to your imagination what he does with figgy pudding. But yeah. I like to assume it's waterboarding. Let's say that.
Yeah. That's the, I guess, least offensive option.
Look, I want it to be that hole that gets messed with when I'm talking about here.
So while this is happening, Queen Slug for a Butt knocks down his wall, comments on his foot odor, and she tells him she's going to be transforming him from the symbol of good to the symbol of ultimate evil.
I should be using more dogs are barking to mean feet smell bad.
They usually mean your feet just hurt.
Yeah,
I've never heard
so
dogs
too.
Are barking for like feet stench.
I like the idea that barking, which is sound, translates to a strong odor somehow.
What smells like boot feet in here? And then we are at the Turlock Mall, and I was like, Turlock, what does that mean? I googled it. Turlock is the town they live in, so I don't think it means anything outside of that.
I would have figured it'd be some sort of joke, like Frostbite Falls or whatever. But
it's not like, again, not in the games. Jim does not live in a house in the games, but yes, here is Jim at the mall.
Coming through, one side, lady with a baby.
Jim, you have to wait in line for Santa like everybody else.
Oh, but the longer I wait, the wetter Santa's lap gets.
You know, this Santa guy is very suspicious, especially the naughty and nice thing. You know, who is he to judge us anyway? I'm gonna kick his butt.
But my inedible fruitcake of seasonal delight, that's not the real Santa.
Not the real Santa?
No, mall Santas are merely the actual Santa's duly deputized representatives, ordained in a mysterious arcane ceremony held under cover of darkness at the North Pole. I'm told the whole thing is very spiritual and touching.
So, how does the real Santa know what you want for Christmas?
I'm glad you asked, Princess. The mall Santas are connected to him via a psychic link, which operates through their magical phony beards.
Where did you hear all this anyway?
The voices in my head told me.
So our hero is clinically insane.
Yes. Yeah.
And but yeah, Dan makes any line reading 38% funnier. I've heard it's very spiritual.
I love it. I hear it's very spiritual. Yeah, that he shifts. Jim can just shift into another voice as needed. He's mostly his voice, but yeah. I forgot the Princess What's-Her-Name is kind of like this. She's written to be like this hippie outsider, just somebody who questions society at most turns. She's just like, is this what your human society does? I don't understand.
They had to make something of her because the joke in the games was she's just a nothing. She's just like the MacGuffin.
Yeah. I mean, with Rock and Bod, but just, she's the point that she's a What's-Her-Name is that's how useless she is as a character.
I'll tell you what, I googled her to be like, you know, what did she look like in the games? I got a lot of images I wasn't expecting. So
safe search on for that
yes,
one.
Yes, just a warning for all of you out there.
Man, I mean, another episode I watched had them all get like inflated. It was like inflation porn as well. Monkey for a head blast people with his fat ray, and so it turned everybody fat at the end of it.
I am quote unquote glad you brought that up. I think I've talked about this before, but when I'm doing research about cartoons, often there will not be any images of the cartoon except on one place, the inflation wiki. If Max from Goof Troop got inflated, he'll be there.
See,
every frame of it.
Every one of the, I've been taken to other specific fetish websites, not just for that. Like also the one I always remember was I could not find any footage of this one time only aired Basically, it was the Justice League, but the Sonny and Cher show kind of thing. But the only place I could find it was a specific YouTube that's only about women in tall boots. Cool. It had every clip of the characters who are women in tall boots in that. It was just every frame that they were on.
No, I mean, no shame. That's a wholesome fetish.
Yeah,
that's very wholesome.
Yeah, I don't want to judge that at all.
You know, I was looking at Dan Castellaneta's IMDb, and after the 90s, he did not really do as much voice acting. I wonder why he got so into it, because he is on so many things as regular characters, often the lead of the show.
Yeah.
But, yeah, maybe he was just trying to show the Simpsons, you know, producers, like, I can do other stuff. Pay me more.
Yeah, I think he, you know, was a workaday voice actor who I think got a certain more level of prestige, but... I mean, I do think it was that they got a big raise at the end of the decade, and that was why he could be more choosy.
I don't need to go anywhere else. No more worm work for me.
Though it was special, like in DuckTales 2017, when Megavolt said like two lines, they did get him back for it.
Really? He came back? I still need to watch those.
Just for one of them. I think in the more recent one where Megavolt's in it, he is not Megavolt. But though they still got back Mike Bell to be Quackerjack.
So Jim jumps on Santa's lap, and it turns out to be his old cellmate, Walter, which I guess Jim has a history of being in prison.
Yes. So I believe he gets wrongly accused of something. They take away his super suit and put him in jail. And so Wallace, I remember very well, because the way that Jim Cummings said, "Dental floss." I look back on it now, and that was... the children's TV show version of a don't drop the soap kind of joke, that he turns Jim into dental floss is what he does as his prison cellmate.
I figured it was one of those styles of jokes, but I'm surprised kids' cartoons in the 90s could do.
Yes, yeah. It was kind of shocking, honestly, to think back on it now, but I just remember how cute it was to hear Jim Cummings as this snaggle-toothed monster man. I love, too, in the shot of him or the ordaining of other Santas, it's a payment of money to Santa at a cash register that just lets people be them. I also think that shot of Peter Puppy, that's supposed to be the kids at home who are just like, that's not the real Santa.
I guess it draws into the lore of, like, when you start figuring things out as a kid, I even heard this, like, the helper thing. But the helper thing is now just like a very strange, just kind of cultish thing where there are psychic powers involved, psychic beards.
I hate that Elf on the Shelf thing. That's one of my least favorite.
Glad I never lived through that era.
As I look at that from the outside and be like, what are you doing to your children?
But it's getting them used to the surveillance stage. It's like, you are always watched.
I guess if you can comfort them, obviously you can't get rid of the surveillance state. So I guess it helps them deal with it better. But I was just thinking of that whole thing of that you have to say, oh no, they're Santa's helpers. It all just stems from like a mall decided decades ago, we're going to have Santa added, and that brings kids there, and then their parents spend money. And then once, you know, it spread out so much, you were able to know that, like, well, wait, my friend saw a different Santa at a different mall. And you have to then make up a cover for this consumerist bullshit of just that is all just about bringing people into a mall.
Is Santa being visited this year? Is he like in a hazmat suit? What's the situation there? Are you Zoom chatting with Santa? I bet there has to be, like, pay $5, you Zoom chat with Santa.
For sure, there has to be. I feel bad for those mall Santa guys, like, who they grow their beard all year, and now... But then again, like, they are at the most at risk. Like, they can't... An actual old man should not be being touched by all those people.
They already were disease sponges.
Yes,
all those kids coughing and sneezing. They make jokes about the kids just getting liquids on Santa.
Yeah, that's the second piss joke in this episode, actually.
But, at this point in the episode, Walter, the Jim's former cellmate, gets an alert on his psychical beard.
So,
and
what was true? Jim heard in his head was true.
Jim is crazy, But that part was true. And Jim wants a pony, so it's weird to hear a Dan Castellaneta character want a pony.
Oh, yeah. He's stealing that from Lisa. It's a great run through the whole episode, his wish for a pony.
And Walter calls him Floppy Diskhead.
Oh, yeah. That was what he called him in prison, too. Okay. And he calls him former dental floss as well.
Okay. I couldn't make it out, but I think it's pretty risque to call someone a Diskhead.
They were getting away with that. I mean, there's another bit in here that, like, fully sounded like they said a dirty word. Mm. Like, but it's I just love Jim's childlike excitement at Santa Claus, that it makes Peter the much more mature of the two of them, as it usually was. But
sort of like, let's say, Peter Griffin and Brian.
Right? Yeah, actually, it's the exact same combo.
Investigate Seth MacFarlane. He ripped this off. So Jim assembles his stalwart lumberjacks to save Santa and his pony, and they arrive at the North Pole. And gasp of horror, Santa is gone.
Santa is gone! And no Santa means no Christmas!
Oh, well, at least we still have Hanukkah and Kwanzaa.
You don't understand, puppy boy. Without Christmas, the U.S. economy will collapse. Anarchy will reign.
And I won't get my pony.
Your point?
We are doomed! Doomed, I tell you! Doomed for those keeping score at home!
Wow, so amazing screaming. That's why I cut that clip out. But I love the moral, which is like, Christmas needs to exist so the U.S. economy won't collapse.
Yeah,
we need it to live.
We're really tested it this year, 2020, yes. I think. But yeah, it's
we've broken every other holiday so far.
It's funny, we just did that South Park very crappy Christmas,
yeah,
that has the same moral to the story there. But yeah, to see in a 1996 kids cartoon, Jim just screaming like, no, it's to prevent the fall of the American economy and prevent anarchy.
And Peter is right to point out, it's like, well, there are other holidays in December. It's like, that doesn't matter.
Yes, yeah. I mean, too, that felt very progressive or countercultural to be like, well, there are other, I mean, this is a Christmas episode, but there's more than just Christmas, you know?
So after the act break, Jim questions these elves that are left behind. They're playing cards, and Jim accuses them of just letting Santa disappear. But they all say, you know, like, we keep our eyes on our work, because if we slack off, you know what happens.
Yeah.
And it's Figgy Pudding goes somewhere.
Yeah, at the end of this episode, they make Santa too nice like this. There's not a consistency to Santa. They can make him crueler throughout, but I like how bad he treats the elves. It's funny.
I'd like to see the elves unhappy with Santa's return.
I also like their line that they're like, man, we just say we're elves to pick up chicks. And then the way Dan says, ooh, does it work? Like that,
not
that's
even a little is what the elf says.
It's such a clever little bit there. And that, yeah, the elves are just like a-holes. I wonder if that was a censor note to like have the elves say they're not really elves in case kids at home are heartbroken that the elves are like these poker playing jerks who get treated horribly all the time.
Who've all been tortured.
Yeah.
And so from this scene, we go to the Personifications of Abstract Concepts Club. And you and I just watched Citizen Kane. So zooming into the top of a skylight of a building and then fading into the scene below.
That was a Citizen Kane thing.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That's a Susan Alexander introduction.
They do that twice in that movie. So it's been in my brain. I'm like, did you just steal a shot from Citizen Kane? And I think they did, which is fine.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. No. And one, and the name, Personification of Abstract Concept Club, that is a very Hitchhiker's Guide joke.
Definitely.
Too. Yeah, which, and I like that. I mean, to me, I had only started watching Monty Python at the time, so I think I knew the flavor of comedy, but I didn't know it was like a full-on just, you know, Americanization of that very dry British wit about things.
For sure. And in this next clip, it's important to point out that at the table next to Jim and the gang, there's the Easter Bunny, Death, Cupid, and the Tooth Fairy.
Santa, sure, I've seen Santa in every stinking shopping mall, and every stinking street corner, at the end of every stinking Christmas parade.
Go, boy!
I even saw a stinking cartoon about him!
Man, I hope they didn't do that same old worn-out story where Santa gets kidnapped and...
Do I detect a note of jealousy?
Hey, I work just as hard as that overgrown pixie, but do I get all the media attention? No!
But didn't I see you in some Swedish movie?
Oh, Swedish! Big wow! And was I played by Burl Ives? I don't think so.
Begging your pardon there, Jimbo.
I don't mind the vicious mauling, but you spilled my mocha.
If you ask me, Santa got what was coming to him.
We have like two drunk characters in the scene.
Yeah, there's not. I don't think there's even the usual trick they have of like a carton next to them that says eggnog or whatever to make it clear this is not alcohol.
Or like signs for root beer in the background. Like Rudolph is drinking a yellowish liquid out of a pint glass.
He is drunk. Like, yeah.
I think Death was a little lit too.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. His complaining is so great. I love that. Like there have been other sketches about, you know, the Easter Bunny or whatever, jealous of Santa Claus. But the idea that Death itself is like, oh, I'm not as popular as Santa Claus. Like, that's so funny. And to get in a Seventh Seal joke,
yeah,
too, is something else.
That's pretty classy.
I think maybe as a youngster, I could get it of just that I knew it was a reference to Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey at the very least.
And Animaniacs did an episode with that guy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's right, yeah.
But the noise you heard in the background is like after Jim elbows Peter to shut up about the premise of the plot, Peter flies off screen and then he transforms into the monster. We don't see it. Mm-hmm. And that's why he jumps back on as the monster. Worst level in that entire series is the Peter Puppy level. I defy you to finish that level. It sucks.
I mean, that underwater part of the little glass bowl, like that... The tension of that one is horrible too. But yes, Peter Puppy, it's in one of the most aggressive like escort things you'll ever do in a game of that era, and it's just no fun.
It makes me mad.
It's so horrible, annoying, and it really feels like both of those levels are just, we can't let you beat this on a rental. Like, we gotta make this too hard for you.
So they talk to Rudolph. He's incredibly drunk. A nice Charlie Adler drunk voice. Mm-hmm. And basically he points out the true lesson of the famous stop motion Rudolph and the famous song and everything, and that Santa thinks you're a freak until he needs your disability to help him, and then you're his pal for one night.
I love that. Yeah, it was so new. A thought at the time to be like, actually, like, now it's so boring. Like,
I mean, yeah, Dana Gould has the best bit about that, that entire special.
I don't call that a penis. I call it a freak maker. but now seeing, I think I saw like somebody did an article like this year of, hey, you ever watched the Rudolph special? It's actually kind of bad, or it teaches the wrong lesson. It just feels so old to me now. I feel like I've been talking about it for 3 decades. But I also love the term, a hard reindeer is going to fall. That's funny. And also, any joke that gets to mock Rush Limbaugh on a kid's cartoon, you're teaching kids the right lesson.
Yeah, Rudolph tells Jim Santa was kidnapped by an insect with a butt the size of a Macy's balloon. And Jim goes, Rush Limbaugh!
Good joke.
So, yes, they head off to Insectica, and the queen is trying to brainwash all the good out of Santa. So it's like basically a brainwashing montage where he's strapped down sort of like Clockwork Orange style, surrounded by swirling lights. This cacophony of sound is around him with all of these voices speaking of horrible Christmas moments, like a kid talking about getting socks and underwear, a wife saying, honey, the tree's on fire, and a dad complaining about not being able to find Tab C, which was the thing that Santa wanted out of the fashion model beach house.
They're making Santa see the pain he causes on Christmas. The tingles of Christmas tension, one would say.
Oh, I love that short.
And they do like CIA tactics of driving someone crazy too. That they reveal that he is having hard metal rock music blasted at him in a room is insane.
It's a great like AC/DC sound alike by Jim Cummings too.
Yes, yeah, that's great. And then they were able to get away. First, they are able to get away with a horrible Santa who wants to drive parents crazy and teaches. Treats elves like property. Mm-hmm. And now they are also letting them do like 3 minutes of torture of Santa Claus on screen.
We don't do as many torture jokes anymore on kids' cartoons ever since we found out we do it ourselves.
Yeah, you can make torture jokes when it's like, well, we're talking about how people in other countries do torture. Or like, hey, you read 1984. This is a parody of like that British thing about torture. But now after, you know, 9/11, and we just have to accept like, well, yeah, we just do it. we torture more people than anybody.
The kids don't need to know.
Yeah.
But yes, in this next scene, so there's like 3 jokes about this. The third one is basically old-fashioned hypnosis. She's trying to get Santa to say, I am an evil death-dealing doom machine, but again Santa resists, but she accidentally hypnotizes the archbug, who zaps her, and she zaps him back.
Yeah, now like he says, you could just snap your fingers. Where's the fun in that?
And now it's time for drastic measures. So the final torture has the queen implanting a microchip into Santa Claus to make him her elderly overweight slave. And
who couldn't use one of those?
Exactly.
I love that.
And is this this a Wrath of Khan thing? The thing in the ear?
It is, but you're right. Putting it in specifically in the ear, it is totally a Wrath of Khan thing, which, again, definitely fits the generation of comedy here. Though, yeah, you know what? When, there's a joke about Batman's that is strange to me. It shows, I guess, what public opinion was in 96, because...
Oh, let's hear it. I have the clip.
Okay.
Now I must test him to see if he's truly evil. Repeat after me. Good is bad. Bad is good.
Good is bad. Bad is good.
Val Kilmer was okay, but for my money, nobody fills a pair of tights like Adam West.
Val Kilmer was okay, but for my money, nobody fills a pair of tights like Adam West.
Yes, he is truly evil. Every home on Earth, just as Santa does every year. But instead of gifts, he'll bring mind control microchips. All the good little girls and boys of Earth will be my mindless slaves. Okay, Pilgrim, saddle up!
So yeah, what's your Batman opinion, Henry?
So I think this reflects an interesting time for Batman movies, which was... So they treated as evil. The evil choice is saying that Adam West would be better than Val Kilmer. So I think this reflects a weird time in Batman fandom where if you were a hardcore Batman fan, you wanted him dark and cool and not for little kids. You didn't, even though the Adam West Batman show is like the perfect comedy and one of the funniest like camp things that has ever existed. The idea that Adam West Batman made cool Bane Batman less cool. So if you welcomed him as like, if you say, oh, Adam West is actually the best Batman, you are demeaning the coolness of Batman by saying Adam West is the best one. And public opinion has shifted so much on that now. It's crazy to think there would be a joke about how the evil choice would be preferring Adam West to Val Kilmer. Like, it would completely be inverted like a year later.
I think so.
Like.
I think now the evil Batman choice is Ben Affleck. Did anyone actually like him as Batman?
You know, I think I've heard some contrarians who like him. But, I mean, he is, as a Batman goes, he is the most like Elon Musk a Batman is, I suppose, which is some people like that. I don't. But yeah, he's basically like, this is Ben Affleck is a Batman who drinks and has casual sex, and then he punishes himself by doing CrossFit.
So after she says saddle up, that's when Jim, Peter, and the princess blast a hole through the wall. Her Santa napping days are over, or are they? Because she takes a hostage, the Archbug. And I like how Peter says, that's a bad guy. Yeah. So Jim just shoots the hostage. So classic speed protocol, shoot the hostage.
That's so hilarious how, like, I was thinking, like, what other shows would get away with a shoot the good guy shoots the hostage joke?
But luckily, like, we've seen him get blasted before in this episode, so we know, like, he just turns into, like, a Looney Tune black blob.
But, man, yeah, I like, even thinking about it now, the rules that are on all these shows, Jim got to pull the trigger on his laser gun and hit someone and blast them. Like, you never get to do that, even in the comedy ones.
This is 11:30 territory. Things get weird before noon. So yes, after shooting the hostage, the queen crushes them with her giant butt thanks to her aerobics.
That has to be on a fetish website too.
Oh yeah,
right?
Look for the giant slug butt wiki. I'm sure it's on there.
Why in the crushing part too?
That,
yeah.
Oh, for sure, yeah. For sure. So the queen escorts Santa away, and Jim says he can kiss his pony goodbye. And there's a very strange joke where Peter is still crushed. He goes, "Never kiss a pony."
Yeah, that's a good. I like that.
Does he have a history? Like, it went bad for him when he kissed the pony?
You know, I don't think he's kissed I don't recall other jokes where he kissed a pony.
Or he's just like, Jim, that's gross. Don't kiss a pony.
Also, this was the bit where it really sounded to me, thanks to the voice effect they were doing on Santa, it sounds like he says fuckers instead of suckers to me.
The sound mix on this show is very noisy, to the point where I started watching it with headphones halfway through because there's just so much noise happening.
Yeah, I did this all with headphones. In general, the acting I think is really good because it does feel like everybody's together. I think it was the full cast.
And after this, the queen leaves with Santa and leaves Jim and the gang behind. She pulls this lever and all these doors slide up and these arm bugs come out. Also, I don't think those are in the games either, these guys.
No, they're not even toys either. In fact, they're just very generic looking, just like Stormtrooper guys.
It looks like you just buy a bucket of those or something.
They're target practice for Jim, pretty much.
So Act 3 begins, and this is when they take out all of these bugs.
"'Tis the night before Christmas, and all through Insectica, not a creature is stirring. Unless you count the Zerbs, who are about to blast our heroes into a cloud of free-floating subatomic particles.
Not if I have anything to say about it!
Nicely done, my detached retina of Whoopi!
My sister used to pull that on me every year, right after saying, Happy Birthday!
So there's a handy lever next to the princess where she pulls it and a giant booby-trap birthday cake rises out of the ground.
Real pull out of the ass moment there to get him out of this thing.
I guess in a slapstick show, anything goes.
Yeah,
though.
But it's funny they have their cake and eat it too, of just like, oh man, your heroes are in danger. Don't change the channel. And then when it comes back, like, come on, nothing's wrong.
And I left in a bit of the narrator so people could hear the nice Klee style stylings of Jeff Bennett.
But it's really just pulling it out of their butt there, that exploding cake bin. And also that at least Earthworm Jim gets to say another one of his always original compliments that sounds horrible to her.
That's a real Mad Libs. I mean, I guess my inedible fruitcake of something was funny, but this my detached retina of Whoopi.
Yes, yeah. It doesn't even fit with the thing that just happened. But and same with like the level of creativeness of him always saying like your festeringness, your wretchedness, like always new gross ways to describe someone.
I do like the very tropey conceit of the villain who their assistant is always like, yes, your awfulness.
Oh yes,
yes, your vileness.
I don't think that guy's in the game either.
No,
right?
He's not.
They need to make him out. I mean, again,
it's a weird design too for that guy.
Queen Slug for a Butt is just, she's not really a character in the first game anyway. She's a stage you run on and then you see her head at the end of it.
Isn't the entire stage her butt?
Yes, the entire stage is her butt. Yeah, yeah. And I mean, really, it's just, it's the queen alien is what it is.
So now Santa and the queen are breaking into their first house, and it'll be their only house because there's not a lot of time left.
Yes.
And the queen is obviously having problems getting down the chimney with her giant butt. She eventually does and crushes Santa. And there's an odd line where she says, now I know how a heavy Hungarian dinner feels, which, all right, that's interesting. I don't know what that means.
Guess it's like how you feel really full after eating it.
I've never had a Hungarian dinner.
Yeah, you talk about Mad Libs, that feels like what's a funny descriptor for a heavy dinner? Hungarian?
Sure. Yeah. Hungarian's a funny adjective.
Yeah.
So Santa pulls out his list. Emmett and Susie have been good, although Susie did have that armed robbery conviction, which,
holy hell,
pretty cool. Susie seems pretty rad.
Yeah.
The queen reminds Santa they're not there to deliver toys. They're there to distribute their microchips because it's part of their world domination plan to turn everybody evil or something. I don't know, just to serve the queen.
Yeah, and then she eats the entire plate and glass of cookies, and what's disgusting to her is raisins.
You know what, they work in oatmeal cookies.
They're
the star of the show.
I like raisins in cookies. Like, okay, raisins in a chocolate cookie, maybe I like that less. And of course, especially at Xmas time, I prefer a chocolate chip cookie and then a classic frosted sugar cookie.
Yes.
Before I would have anything with raisins in it, sure.
But when I grew up, I just ate so many like warm boxes of raisins where they're all just like clumped together.
Oh,
where
yes, yeah.
I only eat raisins now in cookie form.
When I see the raisin girl on those red boxes, I think of a sweaty ball of raisins.
Disgusting.
You have to like dump out at lunchtime.
And yet that was the healthiest thing in my lunches, probably.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, well, certainly not my juice box from Kool-Aid. That was on the low end.
Not my bag of chips, my juice box, or my like peanut butter and jelly sandwich, which is just cake.
Yeah,
it's just a cake.
It's like that. Your white bread is essentially a Twinkie.
So what happens next is, she's disgusted by the raisins. She zaps the tree and they go off into the house and find the kids. And they first break into the wrong room, the mom's room. And there's a funny joke where the mom freaks out and the very Jewish sounding father says, if you're going to be this upset, you shouldn't watch the news. So,
Which I agree.
Just a joke about the state of the world in 1996. Who could imagine?
I still feel the rare... I'm feeling a little bummed I can't visit my mom this Xmas time. But when I would, the one thing I would think is, like, you really shouldn't watch the news before bed. The local news is only meant to terrorize people your age.
That's how it keeps you watching.
Yeah, it's bad. Don't watch local news, people.
So they eventually find the children's room, but Peter, the princess, and Jim are waiting in there for them.
Well, that's just perfect. Jim, now!
Now, Queenie, your Yuletide reign of terror is at an end!
Nuh-uh! Oh, darn it!
Come on, you sis!
Tear me off a piece of that action, princess!
You and me, old boy, no holds barred!
Oh, it's no use! I can't fight Santa, the symbol of all that's good, the spirit of Christmas.
Prepare for the kissing ball of utter destruction.
Oh, Santa, Santa, remember Christmas? It's a time of fruitcakes and undercooked turkey, of hazardous electric lights and TV specials featuring celebrities who should never sing in public. A time when children's heads should be filled with visions of sugar plums, not microchips.
Poor Dan.
He's having to scream so much there.
His big speeches are great, though.
I love it. And you know, we talked when we did the Animaniacs 2020 thing, we mentioned how, like, Pinky doesn't reference as many esoteric TV shows. And that is, I feel that in this moment, too, of, like, he's saying, aren't we annoyed by this thing that's always on TV? And specifically the idea of, like, the celebrity Christmas special where they're singing and it's like, but you can't sing. You're not. I think specifically this is about Kathy Lee Gifford.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah, she did have those, right, at this time?
Well, like a year. No, 96 is the same year South Park came out. They did a whole episode about trying to kill her and that she's a bad singer.
I forgot that is what that is based on. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, and also, yeah, it was, one of the SNL TV Funhouse Christmases is watching her singing on TV and it makes Jesus sad. She's a fine singer.
She doesn't
sing
anymore, everybody. We scared her away.
There's worse people to be mad at than Kathy Lee Gifford. Or I think she still goes by that name. I believe her and the other guy aren't together anymore.
And he's also dead, so doesn't help either.
That divorces them for sure, boy.
Divorce for good. I thought I knew everything about Christmas. I have never heard of a kissing ball before.
No, me neither.
And it's a real thing.
What the hell?
It's like this thing you hang up, and I think it's like a bundle of like fir tree branches or whatever a wreath is made out of.
Oh.
And like, apparently the mistletoe can hang from that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. We must have, all the times I've seen mistletoe, it must be attached to a kissing ball, but I never think, I had this conversation about, like, what is a traffic light? Is it also the thing that hold the pole that holds it up, or is that a different thing? I guess I always figured mistletoe is the entire package, not the ball that is attached to that mistletoe.
It's the kissing ball, and believe me, I was afraid to Google kissing ball, but all clean. It came out clean.
That's
so
good.
Very good. So, yeah, the narrator points out at this point that Santa is so touched by Jim's speech that the microchip in his brain burns out. I think it's a bit of a Grinch thing, but they didn't do like the magnification of inside the body where they show you. I think they should have done that at least.
Yeah, I guess budget wise, that's another thing. They're like, we can save a lot of money if we don't have to draw the inside of his brain.
Oh, by the way, the kissing ball is like the orb from Phantasm.
Yes,
the Phantasm orb.
It totally is a Phantasm reference.
Very
cool. Yeah. It's even controlled by an old man, though not as skinny.
So Jim tells Santa he's going to pull his chestnuts out of the fire. Good dirty joke. He steps on the evil kissing ball, and Santa says, if Christmas is in danger, I shall save it. And Jim rightfully points out he's a little old and fat.
That's good.
Yes.
Kind of reminds me of that Eek the Cat joke. Like, really? Aren't you kind of fat?
So in our last clip of this episode, Santa transforms and saves the day.
You may know me as Santa Claus, but in my younger days, I was... Whoa!
Oh, my goodness.
Norse God of Judgment, let the naughty tremble before my awesome might!
Jesus.
Yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus, and he kicks butt!
Oh, Jim, they're beautiful. And
antenna warmers.
I knit them myself. How about you, Fuzz Buddy? Like your gift?
Great. An automatic haggis maker.
Yeah, yeah. Just add the heart, lungs, liver, and stomach of a sheep, and presto!
Don't forget your present, Jim.
Oh, yeah! Gosh, I wonder what it could be. Thanks for saving Christmas. Don't feed the pony rocks like you did with a kitten. Best Claus. This is the bestest Christmas ever!
So he's not crushed by a cow. The fruitcake falls on him and a cow pops out of it. So
yeah,
it completes the cycle of cow crushing.
I like the 1-ton marker on it too. That boy, there's a lot in there. Like, one, they get away with, clearly from the sound of it, Santa chops her to pieces.
I was kind of shocked by that. We don't see it, but he's got an axe. And then the sounds that everyone heard on this podcast were of something being chopped apart, a big wet thing being chopped.
Was it her torso? It was her torso.
She's all torso.
She got hacked to pieces by Santa, who turns out that he's like a Teutonic god. And then on top of that, the joke that seemingly Earthworm Jim killed a cat through starving it by feeding it rocks.
Jesus,
so that's an extra dark joke there.
And the pony is wrapped, so like the head of the pony is sticking out of the paper. That's clearly a pony.
At least it can breathe, but the Jim is still surprised when he opens it. He, much like Homer Simpson, he gets stupider every episode, I think. and until this last joke, I forgot that haggis was a running gag on the show.
Boy. Did the haggis industry recover from the brutal beating it got in the 90s on all these shows?
You know, I watched a recent DuckTales and haggis came up on it too, but they treat it as like, well, Scrooge likes it. Everyone else is still pretty disgusted by it.
If the Ren and Stimpy spinoff character Haggis McHaggis were to have had his own show, it would have been over for Haggis.
Oh, God, yeah. The Haggis Council could have never gotten back.
It tastes better than it sounds.
I'm sure it is no more disgusting than what is in a hot dog.
Exactly.
But every time I hear haggis, I think of the exact description Earthworm Jim always said for it, which is what he says here.
And yeah, that is the final moment of the final episode of Earthworm Jim. Again, that was like...
it's a cow bursting out of a giant fruitcake.
Saying moo. And again, our generation was not cursed by these fruitcakes. I don't even know what they taste like. Maybe they're good. Maybe they just were prepared badly. I don't know.
My mom likes making fruitcake, and she jokes that the people don't like it, but I definitely know from her, she makes a very good fruitcake, and I think a part of it is, you know, soak it in rum. It needs to be, or some liqueur.
As a vehicle for rum, I can see that working.
Mm-hmm. It's good. And also, it's just like, I think we put butter on it and stuff, too, just to soften it a little bit more, but I'm a pro fruitcake guy. I mean, I don't make it. Maybe I'll make it myself this year. I asked my mom for her fruitcake recipe.
I really think the 21st century was the death of the fruitcake joke.
Yeah. Nobody, I mean, people just don't eat them. Like, I guess it's also like that's the death of monoculture again. Like, nobody, it's not that everyone makes fruitcakes anymore.
Occasionally I'll see one like in a grocery store and think like, oh yeah, all those jokes.
I guess the cliche joke has been replaced by pumpkin spice jokes.
You're totally right about that.
If you replace every joke about a pumpkin spiced something during this season of the year, it's just the fruitcake joke of today.
It was just updated. But any final thoughts on the series, Henry? This was the final episode, and I liked it.
Yeah, I liked it too. There's much smarter jokery in it than I thought. Like, funny, and a great voice cast. I mean, as a cartoon that is, as a vehicle for animation, there's not a lot of like good animation in it, but it doesn't falter as much. I maybe it even would be more entertaining to watch if it looked as crappy as some episodes of like Sonic or Street Sharks did, but I think it upholds, the animation is good enough to uphold funny writing that gets, they got away with a lot, and I also appreciate that. And plus, they didn't hire a bunch of cheapo Vancouver voice actors. They went with the best in Los Angeles, baby.
Yeah, I don't think I would just like put it on to watch sincerely. It's not that good, but I was honestly surprised because I thought I was going to be like, oh, you know what? It was kind of cheeky. It was kind of satirical, but it wasn't that good. But I was finding myself genuinely surprised by this episode and what I saw in it. And, It couldn't have lasted any longer. There was no more products to sell. And frankly, it got everything it needed to get out of those characters. But, you know, it was an interesting way to sell toys and like the smartest way to do it. And it wasn't, keeping with the style and tone of the game as well.
Yeah. And I mean, if you're going to emulate anything, Monty Python and also Rocky and Bullwinkle. Like,
yeah.
If you're going to emulate anything, steal from the best. Yeah. So I think Langdale especially, he really pulled this off well. It makes me want to check out his other stuff he's done. You know, I never watched that Dave the Barbarian show.
I've heard good things.
I guess actually Santa Claus is like Dave the Barbarian's dad there. Ooh, in that sequence. Yes. If you really think about it.
Santa Claus origins are happening. But yes, thank you for listening to another Retronauts, and thank you for listening to our 10th holiday special. I love doing these. So much fun every year. Since this is a Patreon episode, I'm not going to do any plugs for Retronauts. It means if you're listening to this, it means you're giving to the show. We appreciate that, so thank you very much, especially throughout this difficult year. I know it's been hard for everybody, so we definitely appreciate your support right now, and we hope that we're entertaining you in this rough, rough time. But Henry, I'm also involved in this, but what is going on with you in your life and the many podcasts we do together?
Man, so many podcasts. I think it's at peak, it's 4 a week sometimes on the Talking Simpsons Network. You should follow me on Twitter at HENEREYG, and that's how you'll stay informed when I do my weekly podcast with Bob. Talking Simpsons and What a Cartoon. Talking Simpsons is our chronological and cromulent exploration of that series, where we go in order. Right now we're just finishing up season 11, and we're about to start our combo year of doing season 2 again and season 12 for the first time. If you're in the holiday spirit, I definitely suggest listening to the great one we did last year about the 30th anniversary of the first Simpsons Christmas special. That was a ton of fun. And of course, if you're a gamer who loves the Simpsons one, go back in our catalog and listen to our one for Marge Be Not Proud. I think you'll really enjoy that. And our What a Cartoon show, if you like me and Bob going through the history in a single episode of one TV series, why, that's what we do every week on the What a Cartoon podcast, where we've covered so many great ones, including, if you like this toy talk, I think you'll also like the one we did on G.I. Joe with Retronauts co-host Jeremy Parrish as our guest on that too. You can find it on every place you find free podcasts. But if you want all of our exclusives and to hear stuff early, you got to sign up at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons, which supports me and Bob doing that full time, baby.
Well, Henry, that's all the time we have today. Please leave and take all of your particles with you. There's too many in this room right
all
now.
All right. I'll blow you a kiss. a virtual hug, Bob.
Behind the plexiglass, please. Well, there you have it, our 10th holiday special. Steve, come out here, would you? This room has been filling up with foreign particles for an hour now, so let's just turn that cleansing gas up to its highest setting. And maybe a little mood music to wrap things up.
Right away, Master.
You know, folks, it's been a rough year, and hopefully the least we could do for you is provide some small bit of relief, or at least a distraction from all of the things. You know, making these podcasts has definitely been a nice distraction for us, so thanks again to all of you for giving us the chance to do Retronauts for another calendar year. And you know, holidays are nothing without tradition, so this year, I've decided to start a new one. I've decided that at the end of every gathering in the holiday cabin, I'm going to light a candle to commemorate another year of remembering things about stuff. And in memory of all the unreleased retro games that can't be with us today. Games like BioForce Ape, StarCraft Ghost, and of course, Gallagher's Gallery. Now, all we have to do is light it, and I have a fresh box of matches right here. Not that time. Once more. Must have gotten a little damp. Not that time. Once more. These things never light on the first try.
To be continued.
Yeah, it's fine. Wir sind Theresa und
Nemo.
Und deshalb sind wir zu Shopify gewechselt.
Die Plattform, die wir vor Shopify verwendet haben, hat regelmäßig Updates gebraucht, die teilweise dazu geführt haben, dass der Shop nicht funktioniert hat.
Endlich macht unser Nemo-Boards-Shop dadurch auch auf den Mobilgeräten eine gute Figur. Und die Illustrationen auf den Boards kommen jetzt viel, viel klarer rüber, was uns ja auch wichtig ist und was unsere Marke auch ausmacht.
Starte deinen Test noch heute für 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/radio.